Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book, In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
And I love your office here. This is what have you got back there? This is like quite a collection.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You'll get three brand new interviews sent to you every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. And of course, you can grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And don't forget to also give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired. Those always help out so much with a show like this. We've had some great guests on lately, including Brent Smith of Shinedown, Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie, Kevin Bacon was here with the Bacon Brothers, Mike McCready and Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, Dave Wakeling of the English Beat, Beth Ditto of Gossip, actor Skeet Ulrich from Scream, Maggie Lindemann, Guy Garvey of Elbow, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, documentarian Sarah Dowland. We're going to be talking about Sue Bird in the Clutch, that tells the story of the WNBA basketball legend, Olympic gold legend, from her earliest sports days through when she announced her retirement just a couple years ago. Now, Sarah, who is also a legend in the visual effects world behind such films as the Harry Potter franchise and The Matrix, she'll tell us why she wanted to tell the story of Sue Bird, why we look up to athletes, and the great coincidence of this doc coming out during Caitlin Clark's record-breaking season and massive ratings for women's basketball playoffs. Sarah also talks about the important stories told within the doc about the WNBA's pay gap, and looks back at when the players were encouraged to hide their sexuality, as well as the levity of seeing that Sue Bird and her partner, Megan Rapinoe, keep their Olympic medals in shoeboxes inside their closets. Would you do that with your Olympic gold? That's what they do. So let's talk about Sue Bird in the Clutch. It's Kyle Meredith with Sarah Dowland.
Hello, great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you and to tell you how much I've enjoyed this. And I should also mention the documentary available for digital purchase and rental on Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, Vudu, and Wolf on Demand. Congratulations, first off. This doc is so good.
Thank you. Well, I had a great subject, so she made it easy for me.
Of course. And I learned so much about Sue. I mean, you know, of course, she's been a name and a superstar, but knowing this backstory and knowing about all the stuff off the court and behind the scenes, I know this is an easy place to start, but I would love to hear, why did you want to tell this story? And how did you get involved? Was this your pitch? Was this her pitch?
Well, Sue was already on board to do a documentary. So Jay Ellis and Ryan Ruco, who are executive producers, and Aaron Bergman, who are executive producers on the documentary, they connected because they knew Sue and they thought it was a great idea and a great time in her career. They knew that she would soon be coming up to retirement, but weren't quite sure when. And they wanted to make sure that there was something to really mark that moment and the legacy of her career. So they approached her first, and she trusted them. And you know, I don't think she loved the idea initially about being on camera all the time, but she got comfortable enough with it and saw the importance of telling her story. And so those executive producers then brought it to a company that I worked a lot with, Jigsaw Productions, and they approached me about it. And I love sport. I follow lots of sports. I didn't follow basketball, but certainly followed a lot of other women's sports. And this just gave me an opportunity, you know, to become a new fan. And so I really tried to embrace that into the storytelling. Okay, so if you don't know much about Sue Bird, or even if you do think you know her story in certain ways, I'm sure that there's going to be things in the film that you don't know about her that you haven't engaged with before. And it's just going to bring all those layers, you know, to her, and different ways for audiences to engage with her. So I really wanted to be able to dive into all components of the story and reveal, obviously, what an incredible basketball player she is, what a legacy she has left for the game, you know, what an impact she's had on and off the court. I just wanted to be able to tell all of those threads of her story and put them together in this one film.
You sort of answered this. I was going to ask, you know, how much you did follow, because I feel like there's probably, especially as a documentarian, there's an advantage to not being like a hardcore fan, or, you know, or not, you know, to a certain extent. Like, what did that allow you? Because I wonder if you had, like, you know, if there's that chance to get, I don't know, like a separation of the fandom, I guess.
I think so. I just tried to embrace that position of someone who was coming into it fresh and new and didn't have any preconceived ideas. And what I found, I followed Sue for two seasons, mostly because in the first season, 2021, she thought she was going to retire, but she wasn't absolutely sure. So we started rolling cameras just in case she did retire. Turns out, end of 2021 season, she feels like she's got another year to play. So she comes back for 2022, and then I follow her again for another season. So I think probably in that first year, I was very much more in that objective position of just trying to, you know, observe her and let her tell me her story. By the second season, I was all in as a fan. So it was getting more and more difficult not to separate myself. And, you know, I found myself at games being completely invested. Sometimes I would be so involved in the game that I would kind of forget what we were filming, and just have to kind of bring myself back and go, okay, let's move on in terms of our shots. But it's, and I hope in the film that sense of actually kind of falling in love with the game, falling in love with Sue, with all the things that she does, that comes out. Because I think even for those fans that have followed her entire career, what really, you know, stood out to me, no matter who I spoke to about her, was just this overwhelming sense of love for her. They might be other players in the game. They might be fans. They might be coaches. They might be former teammates. There's just so much respect for her and what she's done and the legacy that she's built and the contribution she's made to women's basketball that, you know, I wanted fans to feel that when they were watching the doc.
It's interesting also seeing some of the work you'd been doing before this documentary with other docs and the subject matter that you were tackling there with, you know, the Ugandan one and the, you know, big pharma stuff. And then we have this, and this, of course, tells important stories and that I want to get to, but there's also a lot of entertainment. It feels like this would be, I don't know if I want to say a lighter load. I don't want to, you know, put that impression on there, but to some point, there's more entertainment.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I can tell you at the time, I really welcomed that shift. The film that I was working on before this film, I was producing and Alex Gibney was directing, and that was on the opioid crisis. And so I spent a couple of years on that film, embedded with task forces that were trying to disrupt the distribution of fentanyl, seeing the devastation that that was causing hundreds of thousands of Americans. And the world over has this problem. And it was a very dark story and a really sad story. So for me, just in terms of a tonal shift, I absolutely welcomed the transition to Sue's story. I really felt like even as I was kind of looking around myself and seeing what was kind of going on in the world, that an uplifting story actually could just be the perfect antidote that we all need at the time. So I just fully embraced that and thought, you know what, actually, this is how sports make a lot of people feel. That's why we're fans. That's why we follow it. We like to be able to just go. We can check out. We don't have to worry about our personal problems. We can just invest in the dynamics of the game. We can, you know, follow our favorite athletes. You know, we have rituals around the game. It's community, it's sharing. And I just felt like those were all great things that I wanted to tap into.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Sarah Dowland. Do you get a sense then, as you do this, like why do we care so much about athletes? I mean, we hear this, these moments, these there's always so much about inspiration, about being our best selves. But, you know, why is it that we fall for these people?
Well, I mean, I can certainly say in the instance of Sue, it's, you know, it is humbling to have been around her. Because she really just carries herself in such a humble way for somebody who has won so much. But I think for female athletes, and particularly in looking at Sue's story, she's been at the top of her game since she was really in high school. And this is someone who has won, you know, 4 WNBA championships, a couple of NCAA championships, since we're in March Madness and talking a lot about that. 5 Olympic gold medals, historic, you know, 13-time All-Star, all these things. And yet for a lot of the women who are at that level, they're not household names. They have never been paid, you know, the kinds of pay that we see for our male athletes. But they've done it all because they're absolutely passionate about what they do, and they absolutely love it, and they give it their all. And I think those are things that do inspire, that you can see that, oh, these people are really motivated from a genuine place. There hasn't been all these other things that have gone with it that have attracted them to the game. I mean, really, when Sue got started, I mean, the WNBA, you know, started in the late 90s. She's drafted in 2002. There wasn't a lot of money around, and there certainly weren't a lot of resources around. So, you know, genuinely, that was not the motivation for going into the game. And I think that, you know, also Sue, just through her experiences, was exposed to a lot of things. And so when we're kind of looking at voices and people that we look up to and admire or are interested to know about, because of their exposure to all of those different experiences and interactions, they can kind of stand in for you know, different segments of society at different times. So, and I don't know, like pure athleticism at the top level, like it just is impressive. What can I say? It's hard not to be awed by it.
Right, right. I didn't even know about, I mean, I know about pay gaps, and especially, you know, I work in the NPR world. We talk about this a lot. I did not know about the pay gaps when you're really talking about the WNBA. The fact that, you know, it's only 4 months out of the year, and then you have to, you know, if you want to make ends meet, you're probably going overseas, and seeing them playing in Russia, and just, you know, what you'd have to deal with in that kind of environment. I mean, that was really eye-opening. And is it better now? Because at the end of it, you know, there is a part about, and I'm blanking on the law or rule that got passed, that kind of like a union thing. But is it better now than it was then?
Yeah, I think it's definitely better. I mean, in 2020, Sue was part of the leadership that negotiated a new CBA, which basically was all about really better conditions, better pay for players. And yes, there are some rules now about players who do go overseas and the timing of when they come back, because, you know, the WNBA doesn't want to lose those players out of the start of their seasons for too long. But I think a lot of players are still following that model. They're still going overseas. I mean, we saw what happened to Brittany Griner in Russia. And I think that was also part of a review of, like, just what women have to do to actually cobble together their experience. Because it's not just about going overseas for the money. It's going overseas to maintain their conditioning, because no one's paying for anything for them in the off season. They might have sponsorships and so forth, but that's not everybody in the league. And even for those that do, depending on the level of that sponsorship, it may or may not sustain you. So I think those things are still there, but I think where we are really seeing the progress is now when we're looking at our college players, and we're looking at the kinds of sponsorship, the kinds of attention, the deals that are being done. And once the TV rights for the W come up for renegotiation and they reestablish, like, what their true value is, then I think we're going to see a lot more of that progress that's being talked about really come into fruition for those women that are in the league now. But they need those TV rights to be renegotiated and at a much, much higher value to reflect the premium product that these women are delivering.
And to see Sue, you know, spearhead so much of that and be on the forefront of that push, you know, as you tell it, and you know, to be in that moment where, as you all say, the WNBA changes, where they finally get to be themselves. I mean, also telling the story of sexuality, of marketing, and how they went together in the early days. Not surprising at all, but it's still just one of those jaw-dropping moments when you see it spelled out for you. You know, it's like, how? Of course, I remember that, but how, you know, did it get that far? When you told that part of the story, how did you want to tell it?
I really approached the film as a coming-of-age story, because once I was really looking at the story through Sue's lens, I realized that her experiences chart, because she was in the W for 20 seasons or 21 seasons, it really does chart the coming of age of the W, the coming of age of sort of media and culture writ large, but also of Sue and her personal life as well. So all of those things are kind of told through that coming of age lens. And, you know, I feel like when we were working with Sue and following her, that it was, you know, I was watching her in real time get more and more comfortable with herself, with media, with her story, with owning that. I mean, obviously, when she partnered, you know, in her personal life with Megan Rapinoe, there was no hiding that she was gay. So she knew that she was going to have to confront that in a more public way somehow. But she's a very private person, and I think that was quite a struggle for her, just to figure out the why. But once she had answered that for herself, and I think also that even social media had become more positive and embracing, because, you know, early social media was not so kind. And obviously there's still crazy comments and crazy stuff that goes on. I'm not denying that. And I'm sure that, you know, if you're on the receiving end of bad stuff on social, it's horrendous. But I think in terms of a coming out story, there was culturally and socially just much more support around that. So, you know, that's reflected as well in the film, because Sue was really experiencing that real time as we were filming her.
Yeah. And just to get that, to be part of that moment, to actually see that unfold. I mean, you know, and by the way, you mentioned Megan. I have to imagine, I mean, the talent between the two of them in a room
crazy
must emanate in some way while you're in there. That's
It's crazy. And that I will say, many times I had pinch me moments, because I would think, I am just like standing right next to or speaking with two Olympians, like two elites, two champions, who are just the best at what they do. And that is really, you know, quite awe-inspiring to be around them. But they are both also, you know, regular people with regular lives, but who do these extraordinary things in certain moments. And both of them, I think what is incredible is both of them are really known for stepping up on big stages in critical moments, because that's not every athlete's deal, you know, but some really thrive on how they perform under pressure, and both of them do. But part of the reason I wanted to keep the, there's a scene in the film where Sue and Megan are looking at all of, you know, Sue's, but also some of Megan's Olympic gold medals and her championship rings, and they're talking about them, and you know, Sue just has them hidden away in like shoe boxes in a closet, which I just couldn't believe. I thought, if I won those, they'd be hanging everywhere. I'd be wearing them around the house and reminding myself of my wonderful achievements. But you know,
and Megan leaving hers in the police station for 2 years.
I know. It's just like, what? You would think it would be the most precious items that they would own, that they would be in glass, you know, in a cabinet somewhere. But, you know, they're not like that at all. But I, you know, after we finished rolling that day or filming that day, you know, I was holding the gold medals, and, you know, I hope no one saw, but I did actually get a little teary, because I just thought, this is incredible. Like, to actually know that you did this, like you were part of a team that achieved this level. And some people go there, you know, athletes will go their whole careers, their whole lifetimes, and never, ever get close to even competing, let alone winning a gold medal. So, it's an embarrassment of riches with those two. It really is.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Sarah Dowland. Do you think this actually says something, or gets to say something, that this documentary comes out at the same time as Caitlin Clark becoming, you know, beating Pistol Pete's record? Like, what a nice coincidence.
I think this is great. And Sue describes this as really the moment that women's basketball has been waiting for, because what she sort of says about what Caitlin has done is that there is, you know, there's a culture or a social culture around, oh, you know, women can't dunk, it's not the same thing, you know, it's that they don't play like the men, never will. But she's throwing what they call logo threes, you know, which are almost from the half court. There's no arguing with that. It's just like drop the mic moments. And she's doing it not just in a fluke once or twice, but just doing it repeatedly. Then she's breaking records. And I think that was kind of the ignition that everyone has been waiting for, where it's like, huh, okay, now you see the talent pool. Now you see the quality of the female players. Now you see what we're capable of, the potential. And the eyeballs are there, and the ticket sales have followed, and all of the things, the sponsorship, the interest, all of that has been following. And that's great, because that's just going to now, you know, that momentum is going to carry now through to the league. So I think it's a wonderful time. And, you know, I think Sue, you can draw a line from Sue as a point guard to point guards like Caitlin Clark, or, you know, or to Paige Beckers and others. Because that is, you know, that's the legacy that those players like Sue needed to set first. They needed to lay a pathway for that to be done. Because when Sue started out, you know, the league had only just kind of started, you know, in the late 90s. She was drafted in 2002. Women didn't play professional basketball for you know, 21 seasons. They just didn't do that. It wasn't there. It wasn't a thing. So now that is a thing, and now there's an even newer thing that you know, the Caitlin Clarks of this world are doing, which is just brilliant.
And it is, and again, the way you tell this story, I mean, I guess everything is perfect right up until the end, because even though I in my back of my mind, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know how this ends, like remembering, but I'm still waiting for her to win, you know, the final game. When that happens, here you are, you're shooting, you're doing this for a couple of years, and I know that's got to be a part of it. Like, oh, what if they win? And that's how she goes out on top. Of course, it doesn't happen like that. Did that affect how you all were wrapping up at all when you were finishing this?
I mean, I think I stood, as many fans probably did, just still in the moment for just the longest time when it was over for them in the playoffs, because I just couldn't believe it. I think Sue had also such a record of winning, and that somehow it just seemed like, but that's the perfect ending to the story. But I feel like this, the ending, you know, obviously, I mean, it is what it is. I can't make it anything else. But that is really the story of sports. You know, it'll break your heart. It'll also capture your imagination. And it's all of those things in terms of the highs and the lows, the drama, the wins, the losses. And really, the story of this film was about her legacy in its entirety. And it's never about just one moment. It feels that crushingly so, you know, at the times when you're dealing with loss. But actually processing, you know, big things like that, that's all part of it. And, I mean, of course, for the film, yes, we would have loved to have seen Sue go out with a fifth championship. Sue would have loved to have gone out with a fifth championship. But that wasn't to be. But you know what? Those playoff games, her record during those games was absolutely insane. And I know for a lot of people, we focus on the threes or like the big clutch moments. You know, that's obviously what the film in many ways is about, is her being able to come up big in those key moments. But for me, the stuff that I always loved watching about her was her passing, her playmaking. You know, in those playoff games, like there were games where she was having like zero turnovers. And those things, it's those things that make the difference in playoffs. Those are the things that win championships. So, yeah. That she was doing that at 41, you know, at the end of her career is phenomenal.
Yeah, I can't. I'm 42. I can't imagine. Not in any kind of shape like that anyway, but no. No. I wouldn't have been doing that for a few years. But that's also the thing that we that you know, is very obvious. Like, this might be the end of this career, but it's not the end of her story. It might be the end of this documentary, but it's not the end of her story. Like, do you get a sense of what the next chapter for her looks like?
Well, she has a media company that she's launched with Megan Rapinoe, A Touch More. And she is also a co-founder of the production company Together. And I think for Sue, the most important thing and a big reason why she agreed to do this documentary is to get those stories about female athletes out there. That there are so many and they're so... you know, there's so few of them in compared to how many that we have of male athletes. And it would just be good to allow fans more access and more ways of interacting and knowing the history, the future, who the stars are, what are the different sports, you know, what do they have to do to be elite, all of the things that come with their careers and what they do. I know Sue feels very committed to being able to tell more stories, you know, not just her and Megan's story, but other athletes, and not just in basketball, but in other sports as well.
Well, that being her next chapter, what's your next chapter?
Well, it'll be another documentary. So I'm just working on pitching a few different ideas at the moment. And what I love about what I do is that it's just, you know, there's so many different topics and stories to follow. I did really take from this film, though, that doing a story that is positive and has some good to leave on the world is definitely very energizing. And it's something that I really enjoyed and loved. Having a female at the heart of this story was also something I really liked. For some reason, I thought, I seem to have just done a lot of stories about a lot of guys doing nefarious things. I need to change that up. they're all important, and I just try to sort of take my cues from, who are good characters. Like, if I want to get to, a theme, or I really want to tell a particular story, what I really look for is a good character or good characters that are going to be able to get at the story through their lens. And that just gives it a point of view. And that's the way I really like to select my films.
Well, to have been on such amazing projects, even in the earlier part of your career with those big budgets, when you were doing Harry Potter and the Matrix and V for Vendetta and all of those.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an interesting career trajectory for you. Like coming from that world and now predominantly in this world, like, what is it? What keeps you here? What is it about Docs that has won you over?
I think it's the ability to just focus on the story. Visual effects, and actually I still get asked to do visual effects a lot, which is crazy. But I think that the thing that background really gave me is just a complete openness to storytelling and the tools and the means that you have at your disposal to tell a story. Because when you're doing something like that, a lot of the time you're filling in a lot of spaces that have nothing in them, and you're creating things, or you're creating characters. Actors might be just against a green screen, or there may be no landscape there, or whatever it is. And you have to create an entire world, and you have to visualize it and figure out how that's going to come into reality and actually exist in the world of the film. And it was when I was actually in that role that I met Alex Gibney, the documentarian who I've, had the good fortune of collaborating with a lot over the last decade. And he was doing a film called We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. And he needed someone who understood how to make graphics part of the storytelling. And so we met on that project. And it was just the perfect combination to me of using all of the things that I did in the digital world for storytelling in a documentary. And I just loved it. I was absolutely sold on that combination. So I said to him after that, if you have another film that takes this type of storytelling even further, I would be all in. And he said to me, well, might be your lucky day, because I'm actually doing a film called Zero Days. And that was about the Stuxnet malware, which the film is really about cyber warfare. This worm that was put in to disrupt centrifuges in Natanz in Iran, in the nuclear facility. And that really needed a lot of visualization to be able to explain it. And that for me was just like a perfect transition. And so I think after that, I just, felt like I like becoming a sort of mini expert in all these different worlds that bear no relationship to each other. You can be, because someone asked me the other day, but how will you know what questions to ask if you're not a lawyer? And I'm just like, well, because I will become like a little mini lawyer just around this particular subject. And of course, I will also consult with lawyers to help me get the wording right and understand it. But I guess that's just kind of something that I enjoy doing, is just becoming that little mini expert, but also knowing, oh, look, I've got all these tools and devices and ways of telling this story. If I can't film, then I know how else I could make a film in a computer if I needed to. So, yeah.
That's interesting, because you become that mini expert at all these things. you become great at your job, and you're probably also great at a dinner party for small talk on top of it. So it's
I've got some good stories, that's for sure.
Sue Bird in the clutch. I so enjoyed this. I so enjoyed the story that you did decide to tell. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Thank you, Carl. Really love this.
My thanks to Sarah. Sue Bird in the Clutch, out now and available for digital purchase and rental on Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, Vudu, and Wolf On Demand. Thanks to Sarah. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button while you're still here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out. Three a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, sometimes Saturday as well. You get your interviews from your favorite artists, and it helps you discover those new ones. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. After that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent episodes featured some classics and favorites from Lucinda Williams, Elvis Costello, Phosphorescent, The Specials, Sonic Youth, Joni Mitchell, The Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Wilder Woods, The Warren Treaty, Billy Joel, Ray Charles, Dionne Warwick, and my interview with actor Nick Robinson. And that's an example of what you'll hear every weeknight, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I share that love and the Fonz love.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.